Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. Our goal today is to learn about a beetle that lives in spruce trees. We're talking about the spruce bark beetle, which has been getting quite a bit of attention in Alaska thanks to some of our warmer summers. What does the homeowner with a beautiful spruce tree on his property do to protect it from spruce bark beetles? What do land managers do when they have much more acreage to monitor for forest health? What role do pesticides play? When do you know a spruce tree has to go? Here to share lots of information with us are our two experts. We have Stephen Burr, a forest entomologist with the U.S. Forest Service, joining us by phone from Fairbanks. Hi, Stephen.
Hi.
Thanks so much for making time. I know we caught you in between field work, so I'm really glad to have you.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And then in the studio with me, I have Jason Moen with the Alaska Division of Forestry's Forest Health Program, which is in the Department of Natural Resources. Welcome, Jason.
Thank you.
Glad to have you guys here. As always, our listeners' questions and comments are welcome throughout the show. I'll share the numbers with you, and I'll try to repeat them during the show so that if a question pops into your head, you have a chance to give us a call and get an answer. And I'd also like to let our listeners know that we've gathered a lot of web resources on this topic to make it easy for you to find and review. You just have to go to alaskapublic.org, select radio, and scroll down to Hometown Alaska, where you'll find the webpage for this show and all those links that I talked about. So let's get started. Oh, first, let me give the numbers out. If you're in Anchorage and you have questions, please give us a call at 550-8433. Statewide, that number is 1-888-353-5752. And we can also take email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Okay, so Stephen, I'm going to start with you because you're an entomologist. It sounds like heavy. And important. You said you're a forest entomologist, and that's different from just a regular entomologist. So tell us a little bit about that.
That's correct. I mean, probably only people who are entomologists would think about the difference. But an entomologist, for the most part, they study the insects themselves, where a forest entomologist studies the effect insects are having on the trees. So we're looking at, you know, well, what the spruce beetle is doing, mortality, and so on and so forth, how it's affecting trees, and how trees and forests are responding to various insect pests. So that's kind of the distinction between the two.
It's the plants that you worry about, right?
And yeah, I kind of come at it from the trees angle.
Yeah, got it. And Jason, you are a forester. I like to tell people how you got into the field. You know, you studied forestry. I learned just before the show started you have 2 degrees in forestry. So that's not the same as being an entomologist. It's more broadly related to forest health?
Correct. So I have studied a variety of forest health related topics throughout my career, mostly focused on forest insects. Spent a lot of time working with the southern pine beetle and now a lot of time with the spruce beetle. So it's forestry based, but heavy on the forest health side of things.
And I realized when I was reaching out for guests that you and Stephen were very aware of each other. Do you end up traveling together for field work or just talking all the time about what you're seeing? How do you guys relate to each other?
Well, I mean, we certainly do some shared projects. We both have our own projects separately as well, but we typically do spend some amount of time collaborating on projects.
And how about
definitely
you?
We work closely together. In fact, I help out with some of his projects up here. And then, you know, we also do aerial survey together where my office and him collaborate quite extensively. So we work together quite closely throughout the summer.
So
if not in the physical location together.
Yeah. Do you ever find yourselves traveling in airplanes together, flying over forests, looking for infestations? Jason?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All the time?
Well, we fly aerial surveys across forested lands in Alaska each summer, and that's a collaborative effort between the Forest Service and the Division of Forestry. And so Stephen and I have flown together on those surveys, and we're typically in the midst now of doing those surveys in South Central Alaska. Mm-hmm. So,
and another partner in this work is Cooperative Extension, correct?
Correct.
Now
correct.
We don't have a representative from them with us today, but it seems like you guys. Well, for example, there's a great website. We have a link to it on ours, but it's pretty easy to remember if you just Google sprucebarkbeetle.org, you're probably going to, and it seems like it's a conglomeration of information from all those agencies working to give the public what they need to know.
Yeah, so we have the three agencies, the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service, the Division of Forestry, and Forest Health Protection with the Forest Service have collaborated to put together www.alaskasprucebeetle.org. And that's a collective website that we hope will be able to provide people the information they need for whatever issue they might be trying to manage related mm-hmm. to spruce beetle. Mm-hmm.
Now, lots of people probably have seen news stories, because I saw them when I was doing some research, about, you know, mid-May to mid-July when spruce bark beetles are flying, looking for new territory. But that's not the only time you worry about spruce bark beetles, right? In fact, when they're flying, really, there's not much you can do, right? Jason?
So when spruce beetle are actively flying in the spring, early summer, as you mentioned, and that's the time when they're attacking new trees. So immediately before the flight occurs in the spring, those would be good times to be doing treatments if you want to protect trees.
Before April, we're talking April.
Yeah, March, April, sometime in the early spring. And then again, once the beetles are kind of tapering off on flying, as we're in a situation now, that's a good time to start focusing on, you know, identifying trees that did not get attacked this year that might be good trees to consider for treatment, for protectant pesticides or something next year, or trees you might want to remove if they're actively infested or things like that. Mm-hmm. So,
and Stephen, do you have anything different to add to that?
No, that's definitely the optimal time. I mean, because once they're flying, it's not much you can do, so definitely want to do the treatments beforehand. So, yeah, no, mm-hmm. I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, or, you know, start moving affected trees or eliminating affected trees after that.
Well, you might want to avoid cutting trees down during that flying season. That's definitely something you want to avoid, because when the trees are cut, they're going to emit some stress chemicals that the beetles are going to hone in on. And so by doing any cutting during that May to July period, you're actually going to be drawing beetles onto your property. So you want to avoid cutting at that time, managing at that time.
Okay, so that's good. I'm really interested in letting homeowners know the right way to handle trees that they hope to save, or what to do if they find spruce bark beetles in their trees. I didn't know that they were here all the time. I sort of thought this was an infestation that came from someplace else. So could you guys talk a little bit about that they're just part of the ecosystem here?
They are native to Alaska. They are part of the ecosystem, and they have been recorded in outbreaks in basically dendrology or in the wood studies that they've done in the past. They usually occur every 30 to 50 years, the last one being in the 90s, based on the Kenai, when they killed almost 4 million acres, or a little over 4 million acres of trees back then. But they do a natural process. They're kind of nutrient recycling. They act in many ways like a predator does. During endemic populations, or when the populations are low, they go after the sick and the weak. So trees that have been stressed due to flooding or drought or snow damage, so they cause a natural process for that. But when conditions are optimal, like warm summers and warm winters, the beetle population can build, and then they go into this outbreak process. So this is a natural process, even though it can be a little upsetting.
Right. If you just joined us, we're talking about spruce bark beetles. There have been news stories here this summer about, you know, them flying mid-May to mid-July. And so I thought it was a good time to sort of get the lowdown and figure out when what you can do to protect your trees, and what do land managers do to protect their trees. So with us On the phone from Fairbanks, we have Stephen Burr with the U.S. Forest Service, a forest entomologist, and we have Jason Mohn with the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Division of Forestry in a program called the Forest Health Program. And I'm just going to throw out our numbers one more time for you folks. If you have questions, we've got lots of things to cover, but we invite your questions if you want to hone in on something you just want to know. So 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, or you can send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Jason, spruce bark beetle affects spruce trees. So, not necessarily the black spruce, but more the Lutz. So, what are the kinds of spruce trees that it can affect?
Yeah, so spruce beetle can attack all of our native spruces. And certainly black spruce is less favored than
because
the
others. Because it's just a scrawny little tree that doesn't have much to offer, or what?
I'm not exactly sure
why. You haven't interviewed a black spruce.
But typically, we see black spruce attacked far less frequently, that we are seeing some of that in areas in the Susitna Valley. And you know, ornamental spruces like Norway spruce.
That surprised me, yeah. Colorado blue spruce.
Yeah, can also be attacked.
Yeah, essentially because it's a spruce.
Well, spruce beetle is native to not only Alaska, but much of the Rocky Mountains, where Engelmann spruce and blue spruce occur naturally. Mm-hmm. And spruce beetle does occur in those systems. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's those same trees here.
Okay. I was just surprised because, people might make a pretty sizable investment in a big blue spruce for their front yard and be thinking maybe if it's not from Alaska, it's going to be okay. It might not be okay. It might be okay. It might not be okay. So I would like to talk about how you know your tree is infested or how land managers can walk through a forest and know they've got a problem. So you want to start, Jason, and we'll add
sure.
Stephen? Okay, go ahead.
So typically, when in the first year of attack, the tree remains green, but you may see sawdust in the bark cracks or along the base of the tree. You will often see like clumps of or globs of sap mixed with sawdust where the beetle has bored through the bark.
Would that be yellow or red or brown?
It's typically kind of a whitish to yellowish looking sap with definite reddish look to it or brownish look from sawdust being in it. And you'll see that at sites where the beetles have bored in. You may see in the winter, this last winter, for example, we saw quite a lot of woodpecker activity. They're able to identify that there are beetles under the bark there.
And they're hunting.
Yeah, and so they'll fleck bark off of the trees, and so you see little patches of
so
bark.
If you see a lot of that, that's a good indicator that there might be spruce bark beetles.
That's a pretty good indication, yeah.
Okay.
And the second year after attack, those trees will start to, the needle color will start to change. So initially you'll see, typically it's the lower portion of the tree starts to turn color first, or it might be a few branches or something like that. And those needles will turn yellow and then red and then fall off. Eventually, the needles on the whole tree will do that.
Mm-hmm. I've got a question. Would you see those bore that the sawdust you said around the base, but some of that activity in the bark can go quite high up in the tree? Does it start low and move high, or can it start anywhere on the trunk?
Well, so the beetles are preferentially going to attack the lower parts of the tree first.
Because there's more nutrients down there?
I believe it has to do with the shade and things like that on the lower part of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Stephen might be able to.
Yeah, Steve, jump in.
It also has to do with the phloem thickness. The phloem, or the portion of the tree that the beetles are feeding in, which is the part of the tree just inside the bark that moves nutrients from up in the top part of the tree, collected in photosynthesis, down. But that phloem is thicker in the lower part of the tree, and that's where the beetles are going to be feeding.
Okay. I'm just going to go ahead, and we've got a question by email, so I'm just going to throw it out. It comes from Chad, and he says, is it safe to transport beetle-killed firewood from Susitna Valley to my Anchorage home after a long drying period? What advice do you have for Chad? And you guys did tell me that the Susitna Valley was, I think you mentioned it, Jason, that has been an affected area for sure.
Yeah. I would say it depends on how old the trees were when cut. If there's still active beetles in that material, there is the possibility that you could move that material and beetles could emerge wherever you end up with that. You know, if possible, and the wood's been dried out sufficiently, beetles won't survive in that material. So it would depend on how fresh, I guess, or if the material is actively infested.
So if it was standing trees that were still standing and he cut them down, would you recommend drying them out there in the Susitna Valley? I mean, chopping them up or putting them in some kind of different shape before transport and letting them dry in the valley before bringing them into Anchorage? Would that allow the spruce bark beetles to get out of that wood?
Well, you know, to be honest, I would like to say that, you know, spruce beetle is everywhere in Alaska. It's in all the spruce forests. We had an issue earlier this year where some infested wood was brought up into Fairbanks, and I got some concerned phone calls about that. And the idea that's not going to trigger an outbreak because the beetle's already here. And I would say the same thing's probably true with the South. The beetles are already there. If the environmental conditions are optimal for them to go into outbreak, that's what's going to cause that population to explode. An individual who's bringing firewood to his property is not going to cause an outbreak. What he could cause is some infestation on some of his trees if he stacks them near spruce trees, and he could end up possibly killing some of his own trees, but he's not going to trigger an outbreak.
Okay. What is the size of an outbreak then? That's sort of massive. Is that what we're talking about when you, in other words, infesting a few trees on your property versus causing an outbreak is a much more serious situation?
Well, when you look at some of the historical data that we've collected over the last, you know, 30, 40 years, we can monitor somewhere 80 to 90,000 acres a year of mortality throughout the state, and we would not classify that as an outbreak. Mm. But when it starts moving into hundreds of thousands of acres a year, then we start noticing. And that's what we've seen about 500,000 acres in the last couple of years, and that's definitely a trigger.
500,000 acres, wow. By the way, I'm just going to let our listeners know our telephone line is down, but we can take questions by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if it comes back up, I'll let you know. But right now, it's just not working. So let's see. There's a difference between sort of urban areas and wild areas and parkland and backyards. And I sort of learned from talking with Jason that he does not work for the National Forest. He works for the state, but he advises managers on those on parkland property or state park or even federal parkland. So in the situation that we're in right now, where we really are seeing some activity, what kind of conversations are you having with parkland people? Are there mitigation measures going on in parkland that people might see? And Jason or Stephen, I don't know.
So we provide recommendations to not just state and municipal or other entities of that sort. Private landowners are welcome to call as well.
Okay.
And, you know, we provide management recommendations based on the goal of the land manager. We don't necessarily specifically track those recommendations. But we basically give recommendation on request mm-hmm. for those sorts of things.
So maybe what would be helpful is, what might you be telling a land manager in a wild area that's really impacted? Maybe you just let that infestation run its course versus I'm thinking about, you know, close in Chugach State Park where people are hiking. You know, is there a different approach to those land managers? And of course, there's the homeowner or person with a couple of acres and forested. You might say something differently to that person. So first, let's talk about the wild land. What do you still survey those areas to understand size of an outbreak?
Correct.
But what might you be telling those land managers? Just, hey, we're seeing it.
Well, it depends on what they're, again, kind of what Jason had talked about, what they're managing. Now, if they're growing these trees with the intent of harvesting them, then we would recommend that they harvest them. I mean, you know, especially if they're going for sawmill value, then they should do it relatively quickly. If they're going for pulpwood or anything like that, then they can maybe wait a little bit longer to get out there and harvest it. If it's just, if they're just leaving it as wildland, then there's really not a whole lot they can do with a large area, except basically just kind of take it, endure it.
Live with it.
So it just depends on what their goal is for that land.
Yeah. And so let's bring it a little closer to home, like maybe Chugach State Park or even Chugach National Forest, where people are hiking. And I don't know whether we're seeing it there yet. That's my first question. Are we seeing it there? And what advice might you be giving to those land managers?
Well, in terms of if it's occurring there, we haven't yet been able to conduct our annual aerial surveys
so you're not
in
sure
that
yet.
Area, so
yeah.
We don't really have good information on that currently. In a lot of these sorts of areas, we've recommended, and even for homeowners or something like that, if it's trees that are affected that are close to your house or close to a building or something, or in an area where they might fall in one of our windstorms or something like that, then those would be ones that I would prioritize removing if you were going to remove
trees. Because they might be less stable because of the... Would they be less stable with the spruce bark beetle in them?
It's going to be highly variable.
Mm-hmm. Hard to generalize.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, we have to take a little break right now. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We're talking about spruce bark beetles today, and we welcome your questions right now. Our phone line is down, so I won't give you that number, but we do welcome calls, questions coming in via email, because that is working fine. And my guests today are Stephen Burr, a forest entomologist with the U.S. Forest Service, calling in from Fairbanks. And we have here in the studio with us Jason Moen from the DNR Division of Forestry, the Forest Health Program. And we are able to ask them questions about, sort of spruce bark beetle infestation pretty much any place in Alaska. I mean, we're in South Central, and I got a request for a show like this based on questions about pesticides. But these two guys are all over the state, and I think I might get you, both of you, to just let us know, where are the outbreaks most serious this year? Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, so South Central Alaska is really where the bulk of the spruce beetle activity that we're seeing statewide is occurring. So last year we mapped, during our aerial surveys, we cover roughly 15% of the state's forests in a given year or somewhere thereabouts. And so we mapped about 405,000 acres of spruce beetle damage last year during those surveys. And more than 90% of that was in the Susitna Valley and the northwestern portion of the Kenai. So, primarily the focus for us, spruce beetle management-wise and things, has been in the northwestern Kenai and the Susitna Valley.
How does it get from the Kenai to Susitna without hitting Anchorage or, hard? Do you have an idea?
It occurs in all... It already occurs in all these places.
Yeah.
So, it's some trigger that allowed the population to build up in both of these areas. And we do see, spruce beetle populations elsewhere in the state. There's some activity in at the western part of the state scattered in some areas.
Are we talking Dillingham or...
Lake Clark and Katmai area.
Yeah. Okay, Lake Clark. Some activity, but you wouldn't call that an outbreak yet.
It's... large pockets of activity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Steve? Anything to add to that?
Well, I would like to add for the folks in the interior listening, I have been all throughout the interior doing surveys and campground surveys and road surveys, looking particularly, as well as the aerial surveys, looking particularly for spruce beetle activity. We had some high trap captures last year that were kind of a red flag, but I have not been really seeing that again this year. So for those of the folks in the interior who are worried about their trees here, we're not seeing the outbreak here at this time. So, and I didn't see the large trap captures this year that we had seen last year either. Mm-hmm. So it is predominantly in South Central.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I do have a question, again, about the Susitna Valley. Obviously, people are noticing it out there. What is the timeline of recovery for the Susitna Valley looking like? Can you speak to that a little bit, Jason?
You know, every outbreak is going to be different. And so I don't think, you know, we anticipate that this, we first started picking up activity out there related to this increase in 2015. It really substantially increased in 2016. And so, you know, this is a fairly recent initiation of this outbreak. And so at this point, I don't think we really can predict, you know, what the future is going to look like for
it. Or how quickly it might recover.
Or how quickly,
because you
yeah.
could have another intense activity time in 2018 or 2019. We don't know yet for 2018 because you right. still have to go out and take a look. But if it were to be as active as it was in 2016, then you couldn't predict recovery yet, right? Because we're still going through it.
Right. Well, all indications are that the populations are still high in the valley and, you know, in parts of the Kenai Peninsula. While we haven't been able to conduct our aerial surveys, we have been out on the ground in these places and mm-hmm. seeing what's going on. And so mm-hmm. Until we start to see, and we have population monitoring traps at a number of locations. So when populations do start to decrease, we should be able to observe
see a decline
that.
In yeah. the numbers of captures. So these are just little traps that they walk into, and what do you put in there to attract them?
We make it smell like a tree.
Okay. And it's not on the tree, it's on the ground?
It's a series of funnels that are hanging in the woods. So mm-hmm. it smells like a tree to them. They fly into it and get collected in a cup at the bottom of the trap.
Okay. And is that the primary way the aerial surveys would reveal things because you would see damaged trees, but is that a real key monitoring process for you to watch population increase and decrease through those traps?
These specific kinds of traps are pretty typical for bark beetle monitoring throughout the
all kinds
the country,
of bark
all
beetle.
Kinds of
so you have to go in and see what kind of beetles are in there.
Yeah, right? it all depends on what kind of lure you put on it.
Yeah, so, yeah, okay. You know, I've talked with scientists over at UAA who have talked about the the brushing, the adding brush going north, you know, more willow as the climate changes. And Stephen, you said, you know, this year you're not really seeing the numbers that you maybe saw last year. But overall, do you think we are headed more toward a time when we'll see more and more of this simply because we seem to be having warmer winters and warmer summers? What do you think? Hard to say?
Well, yeah, this is an event, and I can't make a trend out of it. Like I said, the last outbreak was 20 years ago. Historically, they average about every 30 to 50 years. Mm-hmm. So this is an outside, the realm of what, in quote, normal. Climate change is definitely something that we're concerned about or so on and so forth, but we don't have any specific data on this outbreak to say that that's what caused this.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely did have warmer summers and winters. Whether that was an event or a trend, I can't say for certain.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Jason? Anything to add to that from your thinking about it and working in it?
No, I mean, we know that, when we have warmer temperatures, spruce beetle life cycles can speed up, and that allows them to potentially build up populations faster. Eventually, things will be such that they won't be as suitable for outbreak conditions, and it will eventually taper off. You know, when that might be, I don't know that we can make any predictions.
But it could be, this is a big state, right? It could be you get really the right kind of conditions for them in one part of the state, and another part of the state doesn't actually have those conditions. So, yeah. So
historically, the interior has not been big for spruce beetle, for example. Like I said, the outbreak that occurred 20 years ago did not occur up here. In fact, maybe we've recorded maybe 600,000 acres over four decades in the interior, as opposed to South Central, where, you know, they lost 4 million acres in the 1990s. So definitely different parts of the state are going to be more susceptible than others.
You know, I think we're talking Homer. I remember it was very visible in Homer, and that's a very popular place. A lot of South Central people travel there for fun and recreation, and I just assumed it was going to march up to Anchorage, but that is not the case. I mean, we have not necessarily had those kind of conditions here close in to the urban area of Anchorage that we might have had, say, down in Homer or in the Susitna Valley. So that's why it does not march up the state. He's shaking his head, yes. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. I think I would like to ask this question, because I did have a caller the other day on a show that asked me about pesticides, and he said what they are spraying on spruce bark beetle, and we weren't even talking about spruce bark beetle, but he raised the issue. We were really talking about farms, but he said that what's being used, and he did not name it, he just said what's being used on spruce bark beetle is actually affecting bees. And I think maybe this is a forest entomology question for Stephen. Tell us a little bit about what is used pesticide-wise on spruce bark beetle. I realize it is not used when they are flying. It's a preventative strategy. But what can you tell us about, if we're working to save trees, what else might be affected in the ecosystem? And how do you think about that, Stephen?
Well, the prominent pesticide used in Alaska, there are multiple pesticides that have been rated to use, but when I speak with the applicators, prominent one is carbaryl pesticide, and it is a broad spectrum pesticide, so it's going to affect more than just the spruce beetle, and it does have an actual bee caution warning on the label, so it can affect bees. It also can be very bad for aquatic invertebrates or other, so you don't want to use it around water systems or stuff that's going to be flowing into the major water systems. But it does afford, it's been found to afford 2 to 3 years protection for the trees when they're treated. So this is not something that can be used on a large scale, and it should not be used on a large scale. But if the landowner has some high-value trees that they want to save, you know, if you have the proper applicator doing it properly, it can be done, you know, relatively safely. I mean, you want to avoid, I mean, they talk about the best time to do it is between dawn and, you know, 2 hours after dawn or 2 hours before dusk when the bees are not active. That's kind of hard up here when there's lots and lots of sunlight.
Mm-hmm. Getting up at 2 a.m. to do
So, but I mean, if you're not getting it on the bees or on the flowers that they're targeting, then it's, you know, a lot of this stuff is going to be dealing with, like, crops that the bees are going to be pollinating. They're not going to be going after the spruce trees.
Mm-hmm.
So they do not pollinate spruce trees.
Okay.
So
okay.
That's going to be less of a risk.
Okay. Anything to add, Jason? That pretty much covers it?
No, I mean, I think he covered it well.
There are sprays, but there are also injected things, right?
Right.
And what are we using both of them up here?
Well, so injectable systemic pesticides available that can protect trees from spruce beetle. And they've been tested outside Alaska and have had some success doing that. We're currently in the process of testing some of those products here to better determine the timing of when application should be made, because with a systemic that's injected directly into the tree, you need time for that to move through the tree. It's going to go up the tree to begin with, and it has to come back down the tree in the phloem layer that Stephen talked about before it's in a place where it would actually be effective. And so that takes
time.
That takes time. So we're in the process of trying to determine how long that takes here, how effective it will be in trees here and things like that. So
right. And things affecting that would be temperature, snowfall?
Yeah, I mean there's a
all
lot
of
variability in in that could affect that.
Are you talking about movement of the pesticide through the tree?
Right. You know, are we talking that if you do something this year, it's going to take a whole year for it to move around the tree, or does it happen in 2 months or what?
It would be faster than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, one of the things I've studied is the vascular tissue of trees and how water moves and all these other things. And yes, there's definitely some question on how long it takes after the injection, but it wouldn't be, you know, a year or months. I mean, it'd probably be closer to weeks that it would move through the tree.
Okay.
Water moves quite readily.
Okay. Okay. So. I've got some questions from a caller, or actually an email. And some of this we've touched on, but people join our show, you know, and they know the topic, and so we may repeat some things. But what do you look for if a tree is infested? We talked about that. Go ahead and run mm-hmm. through them one more time, Jason.
Yeah. So initially, you might see some sawdust in, like, around the base of the tree, or in some of the bark cracks and things like that. You might see globs of sap that have may have a hole in them where the beetle has actually bored through, and the sap pushes out that hole. A lot of times those globs of sap will have sawdust mixed in with them. Those are not always present in an attack. You might also see areas where the bark has been picked off by woodpeckers who are looking for the beetle larvae under the bark. That's really apparent in the wintertime. When that bark falls on top of the snow or things like that. And then the second year after attack is when the tree would start to actually change color. And you'd see needles turning yellow and then red and eventually falling off,
mm-hmm.
Typically from the bottom of the tree first.
First.
Yeah.
And one more question. Is there anything to be done to save a tree once it's infested?
We don't have anything that's effective to protect or to, you know, save a tree that's already mass attacked. So I would say, with few exceptions, once a tree has been heavily infested or it's changing color, then probably it's beyond being saved. I would caution, though, against using color change in the needles as the only diagnostic tool, because there are other things that can cause that are not tree killers. Be sure to look for multiple symptoms.
Right. And one more question. Does watering the trees help them fight off the insects? And what else can a homeowner do? I was thinking about cutting off the lower branches to allow more air circulation. So talk about what a homeowner can do to protect a tree.
Yeah, I mean, certainly keeping your trees growing as vigorously as you can through things like watering them during dry periods or fertilizing as needed.
Is there any particular fertilizer or just anything? Compost, something with nitrogen? I mean, is there anything special? Maybe, Stephen, you might jump in there. I don't know.
That's kind of out of my realm of expertise.
Actually,
on the fertilizer.
That's kind of out of my realm, too.
Yeah.
Would that be co-op extension, you think? Perhaps.
Definitely,
yeah.
Would be a good one for what kind of fertilizer to use, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so go ahead.
Yeah, but also avoid, you also want to avoid driving on your roots, parking on your roots. Spruce is a very shallow rooted tree, and just driving over it with your vehicle can compact roots and cause stress. So that's definitely also something to be avoided.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd also like to add that all the stuff about, you know, not trying to wound the tree, not trying to crush the roots, watering during droughts. When an outbreak occurs, the beetles will be able to kill healthy trees.
Right.
So, I mean, it's always a good idea to try to keep your trees as healthy as possible, but during an outbreak, they will be susceptible.
Hmm. And could we talk a little bit about trimming lower branches, whether what you think about that? That was one idea that came in.
Yeah,
go ahead,
so Jason. So some of the prevention tactics that you would typically want to employ could be things like pruning the lower branches on the tree to allow more sunlight to get to the lower parts of the tree and things like that. You'll keep in the trees thinned if you have a very dense stand of spruce or something like that. But any of those things, in an outbreak situation are going to be less effective than they would be in times of low populations or even probably moderate populations. So, yeah, like as Stephen mentioned, you know, avoiding injuring your tree, whether it's compacting the roots or whether it's hitting it with the lawnmower or something, you know, anything you can do to keep that tree growing vigorously is going to be better than nothing. But it is possible that those trees could still have impacts in some of these really heavy populations of beetles.
Okay.
And I'd like to add, even though we said it earlier, but since we were kind of addressing this again, that if you're going to do the pruning and you're going to do the thinning, don't do it between May and July when the beetles are flying, because that the tree's stress chemicals will draw them in. Do it in early spring before that or fall after the beetles have flown.
Okay. Even right now, Jason was saying there are still some beetles flying.
Yeah. Very few, but we catch occasional ones.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take one more break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. We are talking about spruce bark beetles. We're seeing some heavy activity in Susitna and some on the Kenai. Not so much yet in South Central, although we've learned that both of our guests, are going to be involved in more aerial surveying of South Central, so we might learn more. In the studio, I have Jason Moen with the Department of Natural Resources Division of Forestry. He's in the Forest Health Program. And then by phone from Fairbanks, we have a U.S. Forest Service forest entomologist, Stephen Burr. So welcome back to both of you. During the break, I had a little question, and I'm not sure it's one we can answer. So if we can't, that's okay. But I just wondered, if you've got a healthy spruce tree, does it have a life cycle where you would expect it? You know, it's been healthy. It's grown big. It's grown tall. Can it live for 50 or 100 years? Or do they have something of a natural life cycle? Do you have any idea, Stephen? Maybe this is really not something you guys even think about.
No, they definitely have a natural life cycle. And actually, older stands tend to become more susceptible to you know, infestation of various things. So they can live for, you know, a couple hundred years, but when they get older, then they're going to be requiring more nutrients, more water, and depending on the density of the stand, too. So if you have an old, dense stand, then it becomes definitely more susceptible. So they definitely go through a natural cycle. So if your tree's 50 years old, you're probably okay, but, you know, when you start getting older and the larger trees, those are actually, during an outbreak, those are the ones that the beetles are going to kind of hone in on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's just kind of a tip to people who might have old and healthy, but old spruce trees on their property. Even though they're watering them, if the conditions are right, they could be susceptible. So.
Yes.
Right. Spruce beetle is going to preferentially attack those larger, slower growing trees.
Because they have good flow, nutrient flow, or what?
Perhaps. I don't know if Stephen might.
Well, there's a couple theories on why particularly they also attack the lower bole. One, like I said, that the phloem, the portion of the tree tissue that they feed in, is thicker. But additionally, a tree's defensive chemicals in the lower bole are also less. The tree requires carbon to produce these defensive chemicals that act as toxins or insecticides or deterrents. But they get that carbon gets taken off higher up as it goes, because it's kind of like a first come, first serve. So when you get to the lower portion of the bole, the tree is actually less well defended.
Oh, and that's exactly where the spruce bark beetle tends to attack lower, right?
Yeah, they tend to attack the lower. They can be in higher parts of the tree, but they tend to attack lower part of the bole, yes.
Okay. I wondered about, and again, this might be slightly outside what you have to worry about, but I was thinking about fire danger when we've got large forests that are filled with trees that are dying. And again, this could be a natural occurrence. It could happen anyway. But is that something you would alert, you know, fire managers to if on your surveys through South Central you see large stands of forested land where you can clearly see a lot of, you know, spruce bark beetle impacted trees in that forest? Would you alert fire managers to that?
I can speak to that.
Sure,
so,
I mean,
we certainly are in direct communication with the fire staff within the Division of Forestry, letting them know what we're seeing in terms of spruce beetle activity and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The areas that we're seeing impacted vary widely in their density of spruce. So a lot of these stands are very heavy to birch with only minimal spruce. And some stands are almost pure spruce. So we have quite a variety of stands being impacted. And so, but most questions, fire related would go to our fire staff.
Yeah, right. No rule of thumb here.
No.
It just depends on the location. I thought homeowners and people who even live in more rural areas would have questions about firewood, whether. And we've covered this a little bit, but just in case people are joining us and they didn't hear that. And let me just throw out, if you've got questions, just send us an email to hometown@alaskapublic.org. Right at the moment, our phone line is down, but we're happy to take your questions by email. And we've had some good ones. But let's talk a little bit about firewood and good management practices for firewood.
Yeah. Spruce beetle killed firewood spruce beetle killed trees are certainly suitable for firewood, and it's going to be variable depending on how recent the attacks are on that material as to how likely it would be to still contain beetles or something like that. Once firewood is dried and cured, it's not going to be susceptible to spruce beetle. If spruce beetles were in it, they won't survive. And so typically what we recommend for firewood would be to, stack it, split it and stack it in such a way as to maximize airflow so that wood dries out quickly.
They can't survive in that because they're not getting the nutrients anymore.
Right. As that phloem layer dries out, they can't survive.
Leave.
So
uh-huh.
Another option is to debark that material before it's made into firewood or other wood products. If a log is just going to be left out during the beetle flight period, for example, we'd recommend that you debark it or do something with it like that.
Because they only really go under the phloem is what you call
right.
it. So you don't find them boring into the actual wood core
Correct.
Of a tree. They're just under the bark.
Right.
Okay.
So if you're seeing something boring into the wood, it's not spruce beetle.
It might be something else.
Yeah,
but
we do have some secondary beetles that will bore into the wood of the tree. But spruce beetle is not one of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you can burn this firewood, but you should take some precautions. Steve, anything to add to that?
Yes. If you're bringing home spruce firewood, don't stack it under spruce trees because the beetles will come out of that and they might go right into it. And even though the trees might be healthy, if you're bringing in lots of beetles, that could kill some of the trees in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, they will not go into the wood in your house or in your furniture or anything like that because, as Jason was saying, it's beyond use for them at that point. So you don't need to worry about it going into, them going into your deck or into your house or into your chair. But
okay.
Avoid stacking spruce logs under spruce trees.
Okay. I've got a couple more questions, so why don't I just jump in here. Here's one. Last summer, I spent some time in the Bear Tooths of Wyoming, so I'm not sure if either one of you have worked there. In the U.S. Forest Service campgrounds there, I noticed approximately 6-inch square patches nailed to the pine trees to keep pine bark beetles away. Apparently, they carried a pheromone or other hormone to keep the pine bark beetles away. Do we have anything like that for our spruce bark beetles? Do we have any research ongoing to find such a preventative for selected spruce trees and campgrounds. Okay, who wants to tackle that one?
Well, what those chemicals are anti-aggregate pheromones.
In other words, don't come to the party?
So when the beetle attacks a tree, she will emit an aggregate chemical that will draw other beetles in. To help her mass attack the tree, to overcome the tree's defenses, they need large numbers. But if they have too many, then there won't be enough nutrients left for the brood material. So after a male successfully finds a female, then they start to emit anti-aggregate pheromones. And when enough of those are produced, then it's kind of like this stop signal saying, this tree is full, don't come here. And so that's what those little tags are that they're putting on the trees down there, are anti-aggregate pheromones. To my knowledge, those things have not been substantially tested on spruce beetle up here to a degree that we can use them. Have you heard anything, Jason?
Yeah. So we do know what the anti-aggregation pheromone of spruce beetle is, and during the outbreak in the 90s, it was tested against as a repellent in Alaska and had very mixed results. We have now new formulations of that available, and we're currently testing those in a few locations to see if maybe it might work better now with a new formulation and our current forest situation. So we should have more information on that soon, but at present, it's not something that I would recommend folks try.
It's just a little early. Yeah. That research, of course, you have no idea when the results will be in, but perhaps by next May, maybe, or you have no idea?
Well, I mean, we should at least have a little bit of an idea of whether it is worth
effective.
Pursuing within the year, I would think.
Okay. I have often heard that, you know, you have to study things in Alaska. Because it worked someplace else does not mean it's going to work in Alaska, and we have lots of evidence of that. I've got another question here. Please discuss the advantages and disadvantages of savin, S-A-V-I-N, for spruce bark beetles. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jason?
That's the one of the trade names for the carbaryl-based spray.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So we've kind of touched on a little bit of that. Carbaryl-based sprays are, when done effectively, can provide protection for at least 2 years on trees that are not already attacked. And as far as the tools that we have available now, it's probably the most effective for protecting trees. There are certainly, some concerns, and all of those are listed in the label, like you shouldn't be used near water sources and can have effects on off-target insects and things, as Stephen had briefly touched on.
And this would be a spray as opposed to an injectable?
Right.
Okay.
So it's a spray, and it has to be sprayed up the tree 20 to 25 feet or as high as you can get, because you want to cover the area that the spruce beetle is likely to attack.
Mm-hmm.
If the spruce beetle attacks above where the tree's been sprayed, it can still potentially kill the tree. So
successfully,
yeah.
Eat that tree. Here's another question, which we have touched on a little bit. But again, people join the show. And if the tree is dead, should it be cut down, and when?
If the tree is dead,
and I guess we're talking probably a suburban situation.
Yeah,
probably.
Well, I would remove it as soon as you can.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, once a tree dies, it definitely can become more of a hazard tree. Like Jason said earlier, we don't know exactly when the tree is going to come down, but if it's dead, I would recommend removing it. If it's in, like, if it's a homeowner too, it's probably got beetles in it. So maybe the best thing to do also is to cut it down, split it, and stack it, and dry it out to try to kill the larvae in there before they complete development, if possible, so they don't go to other trees on your property.
Mm-hmm.
That's a possibility as well.
Okay, I'm going to ask each one of you what we haven't touched on that you think is some important fact you want out there. We've had a lot of good questions, touched on a lot of things, but is there something we just haven't even mentioned that's front of mind for you as someone who works on this? How about you, Stephen?
You know, again, I guess we have touched on some, a lot of the key points that I would like to argue, but I mean, make. But one of the ones that I would like to retouch is that it is native to Alaska. It's, this is a natural process. It's not an invasive species. Once the beetles go into outbreak, there's not a whole lot we can do as far as on the large scale. But really, if homeowners are wanting to save these high value trees on their property, then they have some options, and we'd be more than happy to help them find those options.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add there, Jason?
Yeah, I would add. I mean, if people have specific questions, it's fairly easy to find our contact information on the Division of Forestry website, or we're all connected to the AlaskaSpruceBeetle.org website. And I would encourage people to send us questions or give us a call or things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't find the information that you're looking for on AlaskaSpruceBeetle.org, by all means, feel free to contact us. I would suggest for this time of year, just that people take a look at the trees on their property, try and determine if they have green trees that are attacked currently. If they have trees that are not attacked, it's probably late enough in the season that those trees aren't likely to be attacked this year. And those might be good candidates for protective treatments next year. So just be thinking about, if you have some of those actively infested trees, now would be a good time to have those removed if you're going to. And, you know, there's nothing that requires you to remove an infested tree, but if that is something that you're considering, you know, this would be the time of year to look into that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's near your house, it's going to be a less stable tree, right, if it's been infested?
Potentially,
but, over time. Yeah. Uh-huh. I have another question here, by the way. I'm seeing more beetle kill in Eagle River at lower elevations. Is there any advantage to trees being higher up? Is there an elevation advantage for avoiding spruce bark beetle? Does that make any sense to either one of you? Anything you've seen?
I don't know what the literature suggests, but I know based on what we've seen during our aerial surveys and things that it doesn't seem to be affected much by the elevation change. But, there are certainly areas where the spruce up to the upper ends elevation-wise are being affected, and stuff low down is or vice versa.
So it's an equal opportunity kind of pest if the conditions are right.
It appears thus far, anyway.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Being said, there are other, like, mountain pine beetle down south, which is another beetle in the same genus, historically has been limited in elevation, but you're talking about just because it can get colder up there, and so it doesn't, and not as warm, and obviously, so that sometimes the beetle's development isn't as optimal, but we're not seeing it here.
Okay. Oh, I was just about to say spruce bark beetle's getting all the attention, but what are some of the other pests that you're worried about? But I've actually got to go, so maybe that's another show. I'll stay in touch with you, too, and see if maybe there's a time when we would talk about something else. But we sure did learn a lot about spruce bark beetles today. I'd like to thank Stephen Burr, forest entomologist with the U.S. Forest Service, and Jason Moen with the Alaska Division of Forestry's Forest Health Program. And thanks to our listeners and our emailers today. We got a lot of good questions. I'll be back as your host next Monday on Hometown Alaska, when we'll hear from several Alaska musicians just before they head to a DIY music conference in Nashville. We hope they'll play a few tunes. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.